You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Eleven Personnel is back. We are alive, ready to rock and roll here at the NFL Combine, this time without a ton of technical difficulties. Knock on wood. We did an injury beforehand, and I keep doing that. I do it every single time. I got to figure out how to use my computer once and for all. That's what happens when you try to be a YouTube sensation. You go through a few hiccups every now and then. How is your finger after suffering that severe injury?
I think I'm going to be okay. A little blood on the middle finger here. Just the cost of doing business, right? You know, working hard, typing all day, move a chair once, somehow cut your finger. But that's just par for the course here this week in Indianapolis, Nick. It's been a wild ride for the KSR crew up here.
Yep. We're muscling through it, and we're doing it all thanks to our friends at Monticello Bank. 128 years they've been in business. They're going to have competitive rates to get you what you need to get done. They'll finance your future at Monticello Bank, mbcbank.com. Check out their app. It's fantastic. It's outstanding. Monticello Bank, I said yesterday there was 40 locations. I don't think that was correct, but it's 21 in 14 different counties. I think I've got that right this time. It was Google. Google lied to me, Lucky. That's what you get for relying on the folks at Google.
You can't believe everything you read on the internet.
Only at KentuckySportsRadio.com, KSRPlus.com, and at NBCBank.com. Today, Lucky, it was the day we got to hear from the quarterbacks. We did not get to stand next to Bryce Young, but I'm pretty sure he would take two of him standing on his shoulders to be as tall as me.
Yeah, I think that you'd be right. That's like the talk of the day. I believe they'll measure in tomorrow, the quarterback. So we'll get heights, weights, hand size, arm length, all of that good stuff tomorrow on the quarterbacks. Plus, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson are all throwing tomorrow afternoon, Saturday afternoon. So that's really that is the show tomorrow. I mean, that's the show of the week. Really, it's the quarterbacks, and then everybody's been waiting on the height and the weight. For Young, we'll get to see how Levis throws. And we heard from him today. We heard a different Will Levis, I thought, at the podium. We really didn't hear – there was some – not saying it's in a bad way, but there was some arrogance behind how Levis was talking. That seemed like maybe that was kind of the plan of his team, to come out and try to be show some bravado more than normal in this process.
Yeah, because Will is – he's not reserved. He's never been reserved, but he typically in interviews has more of a laid back approach. Whereas today it was very much.
His answers always came across as very calculated, where today was more so. I don't want to say like going rogue, but it was more so wanting to show like some of that competitiveness in just want like that he's here and that he thinks he's the best and letting people know that he thinks he's the best. That's all. It was just different than what we've seen from Levis the past 2 years.
He was a little bit more cranked up, for lack of a better term. He gave some fun quotes, right? I thought that when he got asked about his favorite fruit, which of course that's a question that comes up when talking with NFL prospects, that was when we saw him turn off the like cocky button. It's like he unpushed it and then was just normal Will. But when we got to the cocky Will's fun too, because he gave us some great quotes. And I asked the question pretty simple: how do you differentiate yourself from the other quarterbacks? And not only was it the physical tools, but he talked about how my character, my morals, how I compose myself as a quarterback. But then he really laid it on thick when I asked, "Hey, how come you're doing the quarterback drills? Not everybody always does it. They don't have to do it. And he said, because I got a cannon. Why wouldn't I want to show that off? And that's the big headline. Will Levis, cannon of an arm.
You know, Young's not going to be out there, but he is going to be next to Stroud out there, who's and Richardson, the two other guys he's probably competing with for QB2 honors, bare minimum. The biggest advantage Will has is just his raw physical throwing ability. And I think that's going to be a chance with them in the same building at the same time. That's going to give him maybe potentially a chance not only to pass Stroud, but build some cushion potentially in some team's eyes. And so I think it seems like his camp is really leaning into that and using that. Like that's going to be that's a big piece of their strategy, I think, is have him out there and have him out there when everybody's watching to kind of be above the competition in a controlled setting like that, which that controlled setting is kind of made for him, right? You know, if he's able to deliver the ball accurately and show off some of that big arm, it's going to have a lot of people excited. And he's going to be potentially the talk of the combine if he goes out and has a good throwing performance.
I do just find it interesting, though, that these guys are coached up when we talk to them with our regular football media interviews. But this is a different – there certainly is a strategy that you're just not accustomed to seeing where that they're trying to maximize. He's paying these people a lot of money to maximize the amount of money that he can make. And it's fascinating to see those kind of wheels turning in front of your eyes.
One thing that strikes me every year coming to this event, if you try to ask them, like, you know, you ask a cornerback, hey, if, you know, man coverage, are you comfortable with man coverage? It's usually, like, at college, a little more, like, reserved with what they're saying from, like, a schematic standpoint, where here they're trying to, like, show off what, you know, yes. Yeah. Like, we don't get that. Like, if you go to SEC Media Days and now, if you ask someone related schematic question, you're getting a totally different answer at the combine than you are in college. I think college football, I mean, it's very secretive in a lot of ways, but they're told not to tell what they're doing. Where in this setting, it's all about tell them what you're doing, tell them what you know, and all of that. So it's just different. It's just different. And that's why coming to these events, I think, has some value because you get to, like what Levis saying, he has a cannon and I'm going to show it off. The only person we heard talk like that was Rich Gangarello last year, where Levis was a lot more reserved, I think, in some of the pre- and post-game stuff. We've seen some post-game shenanigans through the years, Cash Daniel and Benny Snell, most notably. But it's just different to see something like this pre an event and to see, again, the bravado, like on the edge of cockiness, I would say. It was just a different Will Levis, and I think that's all by design. I think they're trying to get an image out there and trying to separate Levis because the big advantage he has is just the raw tools and playing in a pro-style offense.
Which there's a fine line you have to walk between cocky and confident. So when you tell me I'm the best, that's the compliment. Shout out to Jadakiss and for all those who know that reference. But there is a fine line that he has to walk, but it does help because of his background. And it's something that doesn't get mentioned enough, but he's had different offensive coordinators 5 years, 3 different ones at Penn State, 2 different ones at Kentucky. He can pick up a new offense quickly, and some stability could do him some good at the next level from a developmental standpoint. The other side of the coin is, at least the last 2 have been quote-unquote pro-style schemes. So that he kind of elaborated on that today. When they go into these sessions and they're drawing up stuff on the board, they're asking him, hey, what was this concept here? What was that? There's a lot of similarities in what they do, how they talk about it. I think Rich Scangarello's play calls might be a little bit longer than X2. You know, it's not 32-Y banana. What was the banana split play for Gruden?
32-Y banana.
Yeah. Oh, I was right, 32-Y banana, yeah. So that's a little bit more simplistic than Rich Scangarello's paragraph that they had to rattle off. But nevertheless, a lot of the stuff that he did at Kentucky is translating to the meeting room over here at the NFL Combine.
Yeah, interesting. First thing he mentioned or was asked about was the Panthers, and kind of elaborated on that. 2 things interesting about the Panthers. Number 1, Thomas Brown, who was the Rams assistant coach last year, who worked with Cohen in L.A. He's the offensive coordinator now in Carolina. 2, Frank Reich worked for Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. Then he left to be the Colts head coach. Rich Scangarello came in and was kind of a special assistant. And if you dig into that, Scangarello had some, like, I think some pass play calling privileges while he was in Philly. So that's two. That, you know, essentially down the line, there's two kind of relationships as an offense be very, very familiar. One, Brown with Rams, two, Reich, and it's kind of Peterson and Eagles ties. So I think that jumps off the page. We talked about it yesterday. I have Carolina mocked with Levis. That just seems like the fit for him. We'll see if it plays out. I think the Texans maybe is someone to watch. Nick, their offensive coordinator, Bob Slowick, he used to work for PFF. Long story short.
PFF loves Will Levis. They love Levis.
They love Levis because of the tools, because of the traits, because of the upside. Just something to keep in mind there. I really came into this week thinking there's very, very little chance Levis is going to go number one. I still think it's that'd be an upset, but I do think it's possible just because it only takes one team, right? The Bears aren't taking a quarterback. They're trading down. Someone's going to have to trade up to get that. And I think I could see the Texans, who, you know, Slowick came from the Niners, right? Or I could see, you know, the Panthers with the Thomas Brown Rams connection and Reich and the Eagles and Peterson kind of connection there. It just – that all – there's some signs there that it could happen for Levis here.
It's possible. We'd love to see it, especially somebody that invested in Will Levis as being the number one overall – earlier in the process. Those were the two teams that he mentioned he's formally with up to this point. Hadn't met with the Colts yet. Does that mean the Colts are out of the sweepstakes?
Famous for the smoke screens. So we'll have to see how that works out with the Colts. But, you know, we don't know. The Colts and Texans dynamic is just fascinating for me, right? They're both same division. They're going to have to go with each other, and they're both taking a quarterback in this draft. And they're both going to – one of them is going to have to trade up to get the quarterback they want. So that in itself is – that's kind of a fascinating dynamic in this draft. Is Levis in that mix, or is it Young and Stroud? We'll have to wait and see. And then tomorrow's going to be big day. There's going to be a lot of overreactions one way or the other with all those quarterbacks throwing, and it's for Levis to maybe gain some ground. And I think he had, like, the struggles last year, you don't really hear it being talked about a lot. Yeah. Outside of, you know, it's the – like we talked about, the popular take now is that Devin Leary's going to – like Kentucky lost the pro prospect, but they're getting a better college quarterback. I don't think that's the thought that a lot of NFL people have. Again, because of the traits and the pro scheme familiarity. I mean, Levis checks a lot of physical toolboxes. It's just, can he get there? Can he get the nuts down? Can he get everything you need to where it meets? And then if it meets, you got a guy with all the tools in the world, and that's really why he's a tantalized prospect.
The part that you didn't mention that I would have thought that would have been a – because, you know, Dan Orlovsky goes on TV, and he's like, you see some of the tools, but you don't see it on tape, which was a very odd way to put it.
It's like a ball of traits that it just hasn't all, like – It hasn't all clicked yet, right? You're just waiting for it to click.
Consistently, on a consistent basis. But it's funny you did bring that up, though, because all of the college football Knicks, not like me, a college football Nick, but all of those college football guys, they bring up stats from the Vanderbilt game, or, you know, they bring up the Tennessee game, and that's not necessarily something that's talked about here or asked about a lot.
I mean, it's Levis and Richardson, both are kind of in that bucket, where the NFL sees traits and values where what these guys can be, but they weren't those guys in college. So you have to ask yourself, why weren't they in college? What was the reason? And can it happen for them, NFL? And I talk about this all the time, but like with Levis and even Richardson, I think like seeing what some of these quarterbacks that have these traits and can be a little bit more mobile, you know, Josh Allen's obviously number one, but even like the QB run I've talked about, it's just a huge deal, and that's what Richardson can bring to the table. Plus, you know, a bazooka arm. Both of them got bazooka right arms, and they can just make a lot of throws. It's a developmental pick, I think, both of them. It's a roll of the dice pick, but if it hits, you know, you could have something. But QB, scouting, evaluating, it's a crapshoot in high school, yeah. And it's a crapshoot in the draft. There's just something that you got to have usually in – sometimes it's really clear. Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow, it was really clear. Like, both these guys are going to be good. Sometimes it's not as clear. Zach Wilson, you just – and it just feels like one of those years. It's just not super clear, but you got to have the quarterback. So, and when you get a high pick and draft, you need to pull the trigger eventually and take one of the QBs. And someone is going to take Will Levis high this year, and we'll see if it works out.
Yeah, and there is a thing, too, that Will Levis has going for him that not everybody – it's not necessarily a good thing, but he's overcome adversity at different stops. At Penn State, as he said, I learned that things don't always go the way they're supposed to, but I'm going to keep my head down, and he found some success. He encountered some more of those roadblocks in 2022, some more adversity, kept pushing through, kept playing through the hits, something you'll probably have to do if you're going to be a top pick in the NFL draft, take some licks, something Joe Burrow's done a lot. And look, and I found it interesting that, for years and years with these NFL guys, that they're emulating, the Peyton Mannings of the world, right? Now, hell, it's just like we were watching Joe Burrow at LSU, and now guys are saying they're watching Joe Burrow to try to emulate his game.
Yeah. It was interesting, the pocket movement with Levis, I thought, because that's an area I think he's really got to get better at. Feeling pressure and then knowing where the kind of gaps or areas are going to be where you can get away, get your feet set underneath you so he can show off that big arm he has. I think that's an issue. He got pressured a lot, but didn't handle the pressure all that great.
He was accurate under pressure, though. I think in PFF he was the best against the blitz in the country.
Like, SC Stack had some stats for him under pressure. He was one of the best quarterbacks now in the SEC. So he's got the experience with that. It's just consistently being able to do it. And with Levis, it's all about, to me, a lot of times just making the layups. Hitting the short intermediate passes to keep the offense moving and in rhythm and ahead of the chain. That's the thing I think for him is the key.
Free throws and layups.
We know he can make the big splash throws. We've seen him on tape, but he's got to make the layups, and that's going to be – it's just part of his development. And if he's going to – if it's going to last, it's going to stick. He's got to get better at that.
And that's what he's going to be tested with. Tomorrow, 1 p.m. is when the coverage starts on NFL Network.
Quarterbacks, receivers, tight ends tomorrow are all working out.
Yeah. And it's not as it'll kind of be a drawn-out process. It's not going to be all action all the time. But that's when you can tune in to check it all out. He'll be thrown to some of the tight ends. And speaking of Joe Burrow, our guy Luckett over here, I might have caught him drooling watching Darnell Washington and Michael Mayer speak.
Yeah. First off, Darnell Washington that's a big dude, man. I mean, you even said, God, does he look like an offensive tackle? And I said, he's literally like 15 pounds away from being Evan.
He's two ham sandwiches away. That's all I need.
Yeah, so that guy is just – he's tantalizing because the ceiling is the roof.
It was tantalizing your word of the day on your word of the day calendar?
I guess so. And then Mayer, dude, that guy just listening to talk, you get fired up. Just listen to that guy. Just football, intense about football, love football, tight end, Travis Kelce, all these guys, every one of these tight ends talks about Travis Kelce.
Washington, though, did have, when he was asked to rank his tight ends, he didn't even consider Travis Kelce a tight end. He's like a receiver. I'm not even going to rank him up there.
Yeah, he's like block first guy, so you got to get after it in the run game.
It would be cool, the local aspect, because the reason why I brought that up, big Bengals fan. Bengals are in the market for a tight end. Mayer having a homecoming, Cuffcath guy, that would be not only cool, it would give some nightmares for some Frederick Douglass guys, some Douglass guys that are on the Kentucky football team now that had to play against him in that state championship game that he just took over. But also, he could just be the spokesperson for – he's got to be a Cincinnati Chili guy, right?
Yeah, I would assume so. Northern Kentucky.
You'd have to be. Between him and Sam Hubbard, too, you would have the local flavor. And doesn't it feel like that all of the really good Bengals teams have some local guy? Who was the kicker there forever that was a local guy?
Kevin Huber was a punter from Cincinnati.
Let's bring him back. We're just going to have all the Cincinnati guys. Can we get Fat Randy back in Cincinnati?
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Are you confident in
Yeah, he's had two good years so far.
We have not talked to any kickers yet, unfortunately. Do we get any? When are the kickers showing up?
I wonder if they were first day. I think, no, they were either first day or yesterday.
Yeah, that sounds right. Which, some of the early returns, Nolan Smith, a Georgia defensive end. Defensive end ran a 4.39.
Yeah, he was the number one overall recruit for the for a reason coming out of high school. But I think, you know, everybody's talking about Nolan Smith, but to me, like, that Kalijah Kancey, just 4.67 40. He went to Pitt. He's an undersized defensive tackle. Like, there's going to be 800 Aaron Donald comps heading into the draft. He's a guy, can he sneak into the first round? He's a name to watch, especially if your team wants an interior pass rusher. A lot of people are going to be looking at him heavily. I think that was the big kind of – those were the two big developments last night. Jack Campbell at Iowa. We talked about Jack Campbell, Nick. He had elite testing. You know, he's got – like, teams are already probably watering at the mouth. 6'4", 240-pound linebacker playing coverage and can
– somebody pinned him to the Steelers, and it's like, that's the most Steelers guy. He could play for the Steelers for a decade and just all-time guy.
Getting Leighton Van Der Esch comps out there already, but there's not
– Luke Kuechly.
Brian Urlacher comps are probably coming down the chimney. But just tall, like those at Vayner, like just like tall, rangy linebackers who can move and play coverage. Like, that's going to be the easy one. We're about to go watch this here in a little bit. Cornerbacks hitting the field and safety today. It's a faster can hit here in Indianapolis, as seen by the Nolan Smith 40. What can Carrington Valentine do? I think for him, we talked about cornerback is a loaded draft. If he goes out here and puts some testing numbers out, there's going to be some real value in him. We talked, like, he could go, I think, probably third round. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a day two pick. If he lasts into day three, he's going to be off the board early. So a big day for him coming up. And then we move forward to see Levis throw tomorrow and then get the chance to talk to Chris Rodriguez, and Tayshaun Manning.
We do need to talk about some of the shenanigans that have gone underway besides Luckett smashing his finger right before we went on air, which only two minor technical difficulties. Very, very minor today. But one thing that did make me not laugh, I was – everybody is dealing with the severe weather around the area, and the reason why the Big J's and the NFL, everybody loves it in Indy, is because you don't have to go outside to get around. Most of the hotels are adjoining, but we are not one of them. And so
it was kind of – we got closer this year because usually we have to drive in. So that was nice. But we picked it – like, it would have been better if we could drive in today because then we could have parked right by the convention center.
We were a short five-minute walk that felt like 50 minutes through the cold rain. But you know what? This is going to make us tougher, right? When we get old, like, we can tell our kids we walked uphill both ways to go to the combine. We got a little grit. That's football weather, right? A little cold rain.
That was like, remember the 2019 season when it rained and wind at the end of the year? That was what the weather was today. Well, you all know at home back in Kentucky, they are dealing with some stuff too. But yeah, that's what it was this morning. It was made the walk a little interesting.
It was also interesting to try to get a good spot, get good dibs, right? Because there was, we knew Levis, it was going to be a crowd. I'm sure the photographer Jacob Noger of UK snapped a photo of all the people there because there's, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of people. So we got there early.
Are you going Colts? Colts mascot?
Well, was going to eventually get there because there was. There was also one lady too who, she just showed up and like knifed her way. Did you see her?
Yeah, I did see the one that asked the music question. Yeah, she started in the back. She like just kind of worked
away. It was impressive. It's like I feel like the shorter women can get away with it, but like if I tried to barge my way through the front of the crowd, then people would riot. It wouldn't work.
In the cameras point of view, the cameras on the they how it works, they have little cameras in the podium for the TV people, and then print and media can get front. Well, right, big old noggin. It's right in the way. So he might make the news tonight back in Louisville, Lexington.
Just a little bit in the way. Not as much in the way as the Indianapolis Colts mascot, which our friend Lindsay Goff, former UKJ school, she's now at WKYT. She was trying to get the Will Levis press conference, but the Indianapolis Colts mascot needed it. Not way Will Levis. But then he turned around and realized he was in front of the cameras and then just walked towards it. Just got as close in the way as he could. Yeah, really cool, huh? Really cool. That's a great camera shot, right? Going right up somebody's nose. But that's what you got. You got the Colts mascot face instead of Will Levis's. I'm sure she was just thrilled to be able to capture that moment.
That peak mascot performer did bow to the Colts mascot. Guys, very creative.
Crazy. Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the report by Ross Dellinger? I don't know if other. Well, he had the report about Saban.
So here's the thing. We have, and as I'm getting worried text messages from people back home, hopefully you're all safe right now through all this severe weather. But Ross Dellinger is the kind of go-to source, if you will, for SEC news breaking, right? I mean, if there's a big SEC news story, he's likely has it. This morning, he wrote an article for Sports Illustrated, and it was quotes from Nick Saban, for the lack of a better term, bitching and moaning because he's got to play Auburn, Tennessee, and
Dallas.
A few hours later, Dellinger notes us, and all he used was an emoji that was cheers. And it was a rundown with every team in the SEC and three opponents. So first and foremost, Luckett, do we think it is legit?
I would assume this is what they have in the league office, right? Like, Dellinger is pretty much embedded with the league. I don't know if that's the right word, but he's pretty tight with...
He knows people.
That's Greg Sankey. He knows Greg Sankey. So if anybody would... Whenever it comes out, if it ever gets scooped, like, he'll be the one that gets that out there.
So I think this is what the working assumption, right? The current... This is what they have...
written out right now, and maybe what they're gonna send in the proposal to the members,
right? And then people are gonna argue and debate, and there might be some minor changes here and there. And for the University of Kentucky, it's not great. It's not great. It's not terrible. The reason why it's not great is having to play Georgia every year. Is who wants to do that? They're the new Bama.
Yes. But to me, like, the six you have in 1 year and the six in the next, that's more important to me than the three permanent. Because what if, like, Alabama, trying to think of another big
LSU,
A&M, or Texas, there are three in one. Like, that's a lot, you know. But regardless, it's just going to be harder. This is going to be infinitely harder. Like, you got two big brands coming in the league. You're going to play an extra conference game. It's just going to be harder. And so, like, even if it wasn't, you know, where everybody's – the reason people over – if this was 5 years ago, you would have saw that, Nick, and we would be like, all right, that's cool. It's just Georgia is the power – yeah, they're the powerhouse right now, all right? They're the new Alabama. So you're freaking out because of that. You don't – but you're playing Mississippi State and South Carolina, teams you have, you know, collectively a good record against the last 5 to 6 years.
Those are going into – and typically so you talk yourself into a win more times than not.
Right, yeah. And if you're going to have good years, you got to beat Mississippi State and South Carolina. I mean, that's just the bottom line, no matter how they shake it out. I mean, everybody – like Brett McMurphy made the joke today, Vanderbilt, 15 permanent opponents. Everybody wants Vanderbilt. Not everybody's going to get Vanderbilt.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that – when the phraseology, for lack of a better term, is rivals, and he doesn't see it as a rival with any of those three. Maybe a little bit with South Carolina, but Kentucky fans don't care about Mississippi State. They typically are good games, but nobody wants to go to Starkville, right? Like, people aren't chomping at that bit for that road trip. And then on the other side, I think Kentucky fans know that you're not going to get by with Vanderbilt every year. They thought, okay, if we're going to get a quote-unquote traditional power, let it be Tennessee at least. And even though
Dellinger reported today, they have ranked teams in the last 10 years, like records, for like a historical bucket. And what I think they're doing, Nick, 16 teams, it's 8-8, right? You're drawing a line at 8-9. The teams in the top eight, they're playing two from that group or pod, and they're playing one from the other pod, group or pod.
Tennessee, the other way around.
Yes, and Tennessee is in Kentucky's group or pod.
Yeah.
So Tennessee, so for historical reference, it's in the same as hockey. So, sorry, Vols. but that's really what it comes down to. And you think, like, the reason Alabama's playing Tennessee is because they're in the bottom bucket. So, like, for Kentucky, it's just figuring out who you want to play. Georgia plays Auburn and Florida. They got to play someone from the bottom. I thought it would be South Carolina just because that is – South Carolina hates Georgia. That's more of a rivalry. That team does get a little bit more buzz, and I would say Kentucky-Georgia traditionally here in the last 10, 15 years. But they're not there. That South Carolina got Florida, Tennessee, and Kentucky, which you would think Kentucky might have got Florida, Tennessee, and then maybe Mississippi State or Vanderbilt. So that's different. Just Mississippi State played every year. Like, Nick, it's dead even. Like, I get why they're sitting in Birmingham. Like, let's just put Kentucky and Mississippi State together. Look, it's 50-50. It's as 50-50 as it gets in this league. So I get that. South Carolina, obviously, those schools are pretty even. You know, it's just the Georgia factor. You got the big predator of the league. It's just you got to butt heads against every year. But, like I say, you're going to have to – like, you're playing them twice in the 4 years anyway. It's not like this what we have right now where you're playing Alabama once every, you know, 5-6 years. It's – you're still going to have to play these teams very frequently. That's why I think the other pods matter just as much, how they split up the 6-6. You're looking at your schedule because you're going to know. But, again, it's 9 games. It's just going to be tougher. You know, Oklahoma and Texas are going into that rotation. It's just going to be tougher, and there's going to be unintended consequences with all of this. What program falls because of this, where it's just too much, and the expectations aren't meeting results, and then that causes like this huge tailspin for one of these schools that had expectations, and then a school with low expectations, can they kind of, if they get the right coach in there, can they kind of punch above their weight class historically? We have to see how all of that plays out. We just don't know how that's going to play out. But what everybody needs to know is it's going to be more difficult, and you're going to have to look at the record different. You just are, right? Like 7-5, you know, 5-4, 4-5, 7-5, 5 or 4-5 is probably going to be a really good year. Like, it's probably you're probably a top 25 team. You know, you're just gonna have to look at it different, and it's just gonna be.
It's kind of how we got our brains warped with records, following COVID year, because it was hard to gauge.
Handle that because we're headed to a 2 week thing with it. It might take us a while to get there, but that's what's going to happen. Like, the Pac-12 is probably gonna, like, all signs point to them maybe imploding, and the Arizona schools, Colorado and Utah going to the Big 12. And then if that happens, what's stopping the Pac-10 from calling Washington and Oregon? And if that happens and Florida State and Clemson can get out of the Grant of Rights ACC, they can come to the SEC. So, like, we are heading down that path to where we're going to have the two huge leagues. And then it's going to be – and then if you knock all those other teams out, it might be easier to make the playoffs. So we just got to have to see how it shakes out. But it's college football is going to be different. Like, the records are going to be different. Like, 7-5 is going to have a lot more value, in my opinion, moving forward than it has in the past, where some people scoff at that record. I think it's gonna be like a legit. You'll be a legitimate team if you're hovering around 500 in the SEC.
Dunger did follow up and say that this is from speaking with league insiders. It's their best educated guess. That's how he phrased it. A rough draft is a good way to put it. Very intrigued. Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, and Florida, they kind of skate by, whereas Texas would get Oklahoma, A&M, Arkansas, which you talk about a team that's a power, that could be a huge buzzsaw for the Longhorns.
Texas is just the easiest team. Texas and Bama, to me, are the easiest teams to draw here. It's just, all right, who Bama every year, right? Auburn, Tennessee, LSU.
You can get behind the 8-ball quickly. I mean, how long will it take for Texas just to have a winning record in the SEC?
Yeah, Texas is all you just feel like they're so close with how they can accumulate talent, right? Like, you just feel like you're so close. But, like, say it's not like the decade Tennessee's coming off. Say, like, Auburn gets in this weird funk now. Like, they could be in deep, deep trouble in this new SEC where they're playing
Alabama, Georgia.
Rotating in A&M, you're rotating in Oklahoma, you're rotating in Texas. We're all assuming, like, Texas will be the one to falter. Oklahoma's kind of on – that boat's rocking a little bit right now, and they draw Texas, Missouri, and Florida. So we're going to have to see how all of this – this shakes out. I mean, but it's going to be a different league, and there's going to be more challenges just because that extra game, and you're playing these teams more. It's not just, you know, it's not two conferences within one conference. It's a legit conference now, or it is going to be. And nine conference games, that's a lot. We saw how the 10 was a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun for, I think, hearing, like, the media people talk about, like, how cool the 10 was. It was cool if you don't care, like, if you're not a fan. But it was hard to watch your team go 5-5, 4-6. And thinking they were better than that. Like the Kentucky team, that team had its flaws, but I did think that was like an 8-4-ish caliber team Kentucky had. And they went 4-6, and it wasn't that fun of a season, mainly because of COVID. But if it would have played out generally in a regular season, that's not like super fun. Yeah. But it's, you're just going to have to – people are going to have to retrain their brains a little bit. And you can't just let people from the outside say, well, that team's not that good. They went 6-3 in the SEC. Well – they're probably 10 to 12 best teams in the country. So, like, if they're not good, who is good?
One of the best in the country is, without a doubt, Monticello Bank. If you aren't banking with NBCBank.com, stop what you're doing. Go there right now. Check out their rates. Very competitive market right now. But bank locally with Monticello Bank. They will have you covered. We're really happy they're with 11 personnel. In the future, we'll be doing something like this at a Monticello Bank. And sometime soon, we're going to be their open spring practice April 1st. Yeah, they're having spring practice starts on Monday. Will Levis was talking to Devin Leary. The guys are, you know, fired up to get this thing going, right, to see where this offense goes. He's excited for the future of the Kentucky offense, even though he's not going to be a part of it. But this is not the calm before the storm, because it's storming and we've got a forklift we're about to drive behind us. I really hope it gets in the frame. Can we filibuster off to get the forklift in the frame? I know. I don't need to wait for that forklift. But it is an exciting time right now. We're about to go watch some guys run around in their underwear for a little bit. It's kind of the last hurdle before we get into some more meat and potatoes over the next 2 months with spring ball, running into the NFL draft, running into camp season, and before you know it, boom, fall camp's here, like it.
Yeah, and it just this spring has more, like, it just feels like it's got more buzz, right? Cohen's back, Lee's here. I feel like it's got more buzz, but there's also questions to be answered, right? You talked about, because portal looms that window in May. So how does that all shake out? To me, Nick, the injuries. We've all seen all these injuries happen in the spring. Just knock on wood. Like, get out of there healthy. I think that's the thing is, anyway, they cannot, you know, football is going to happen. Injuries happen in the season. Let's not have them in the spring. But if an injury does happen, that can tinker their, you know, transfer portal philosophy. We've seen in the past, you go out to Zion Childress, you go out and get Jaquez Jones. If an injury doesn't happen in the spring, those guys probably never play for Kentucky.
Right.
And so let's see how it all takes out here over this next month and with 15 practices.
It's an exciting time for the Kentucky football program. It's exciting to be here in Indy. We appreciate y'all following along with us all weekend long. Make sure you're subscribed to KSR's YouTube channel. Go ahead and hop on KSR Plus. We're having a grand old time there on KS Board. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Thanks for having fun with us. For Adam Lickett, I'm Nick Roush. So long. We'll see you next time.